we're here live on Blog Talk Radio for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio, of course, and we are presented today by Impact Media. Welcome into the show. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again after a long absence. We definitely missed him. The King AC Alien and one of our favorite veterans, especially here on Veterans Day, Mr. Reggie Walker. How you doing, Reggie?
Hey, I'm doing good, Jeremy. Good to be back on.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to have not only you back in, but we know that your feet are on the ground and not up in the air right now, so that's a good thing.
Right. I've gone to silver. I think I'm silver medallion. No, I'm gold medallion. In just under a couple of months, and I had no status this time back in June.
Wow.
That should give you an idea of the type of flying I've been doing, man. It's crazy.
Wow. Then what was that movie with Clooney? Up in the Air. Up in the Air 2 might be starring Reggie Walker, right?
Absolutely. But you got to do what you got to do, man.
Hey, exactly.
You got to do what you got to do.
Exactly. We all kind of been all over the place, but you've definitely been further than the rest of us. But as I said, today is Veterans Day. Happy Veterans Day to all our veterans, whether you served before, if it's unfortunate you're not with us, or if you are still with us and serving now, we definitely appreciate your service. And like I said, special shout out to you, Reggie, for being one of our favorite veterans, obviously, and thanks for your service.
Hey, man, it was my pleasure. And to echo that point, you know, some of us gave some, but there are a number of us that gave it all. And if I had to go back, I wouldn't change it. I'd still do exactly what I did. So, again, I echo your sentiments. Happy Veterans Day to all my fellow veterans and those servicemen that are still out there protecting our daily freedoms. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. And that's something we were talking about right before we came on, is especially the older we get, and, of course, we're obviously not old, but the older we get, the more that number goes up, the more people you either know that did serve and aren't with us anymore, or did serve and are with us, fortunately, or either serve now. It's just that number keeps growing, because maybe we're just surrounded by people who really good people who chose to serve.
Absolutely. And you know, the one trend that's a little different now, that you know, I learned about my own grandfather, rest his soul, passed away last year at the time at the ripe young age of 91. It
wow.
wasn't until I actually went to his memorial service that the Veterans Association did for him that I even realized what he had done during World War II when he was in. My grandfather actually had 2 Bronze Stars, and he never talked about it. It was just something he did.
Wow.
So, you know, the accolades, we just have that many people that are that way, man. They love this country so much that they don't really talk about it. It's just something they do.
Absolutely. And like we were saying before, too, part of the reason I don't put anything on Facebook on national holidays, especially ones like this, is I'm always afraid I'm going to leave somebody out. But for sure, not just the friends and family, because all the way up my history line, we've served in pretty much every major war there is. But my special shout out would be to my grandfather, who passed away a handful of years ago. But by far, he was one of my favorite people. And I'm like the 2.0 updated version of him anyway. If anybody ever knew him, I'm like the new generation version of him. But and then also my father-in-law, who I'm going to see as soon as this show is over, Ron Bennett. Definitely going to give a shout out to him.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir, for your service.
I will definitely tell him that, because I know he had a good day. My wife actually took off, and the VA, one of the local VAs, I believe in Carrollton, took a bunch of the veterans out to Golden Corral in Douglasville, I think, and had a big kind of get-together shindig out there. And I know there's been a lot of other ones. I've seen a lot of them post them up on social media. And it's just awesome that so many restaurants reach out and either give you a discount or say, hey, your meal's on us. Just come see us.
Oh, absolutely. I had the pleasure of joining the second annual Prince Hall Masonic Lodge does an event with the Tuskegee Airmen Foundation.
Wow.
In which we had some of those guys still that, you know, those that are still living actually attend. So So it's a phenomenal experience, and there are a lot of those types of activities going on around. And the one thing I like to add, Jeremy, as we close out this sure. Piece is, I want people to not just remember veterans on Veterans Day and Memorial Day, right? I mean, this should be a great. I'm not going to use this as a platform for other topics, but remember veterans all the time, because exactly. Just because it's not Veterans Day tomorrow doesn't mean, that they still didn't do what they're doing and are still doing what they're doing every day. So, again.
Exactly. And I've always felt that way about every holiday, really. It's like, why just be good on one holiday, or why just be nice to somebody on a holiday because of a certain day? Be nice all the time.
Right. Absolutely.
But, let's get into some football, because I know there's some new people listening tonight, and shout out to them for sure, because I've ran into people who I send links to now because maybe they don't do social media, or it's just easier to send them a link. So definitely shout out to some of the new listeners, and we will get into some football here. Something I didn't have on the sheet that's happened here recently, I'm going to throw those out real quick. Didn't know if you knew, but the Rams have signed Wes Welker. And I hope that after a year off from football that his head is clear and everything. I pray for this guy daily, because he got hit so many times, and I bet he had 20 concussions in like a 5-year span that went undiagnosed, probably because we didn't know about him back then. But, I mean, I just hope Wes's head's in the right spot here.
Dude, it's funny that you say that, Jeremy. When I saw that go over the wire, that was my first thought. Was, especially after guys like John Abraham and right. some other guys who, couldn't remember the last year of his life. I mean, my goodness. It just goes to show, man, when you're a warrior and that's all you love and you have such a passion for something, not even physical harm can keep you, away from it. And man, let's just hope, man, that he doesn't sustain anymore. And more importantly, hopefully, this doesn't come back, to him in later life, man. I tell you, I was not actually glad to see that come across. I mean, I get it, but sometimes you got to know when to shut it down.
Yeah, and especially in this day and age, now that we know about things like head injuries. I mean, you could look at Muhammad Ali and go, man, if he would have only quit a year or 2 years before the end or something like that. But, I think warrior's the word there, okay. That you get those mentalities, you get that mentality that you just want to keep playing because it's what you do. I mean, I don't know if Wes has a degree or anything like that, but, I mean, he may go, if I don't play football, what am I supposed to do?
Right. Exactly. Wow. So, good luck to Wes, man. I mean, he was still phenomenal, but, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, especially in a Rams offense that isn't amazing, and they're in a pretty rough division with three pretty good defenses. So,
right.
I just hope he survives the rest of the season.
I do too. I agree.
And then the other the two things that come across the wire just a few minutes ago, because we have here at the studio, we have NFL Network up just in case something crazy happens. Peyton Manning apparently has a foot injury, and I don't think he's questionable. I think he's just probable, which means there's a 75% chance he's going to play. But his foot injury could keep him out, possibly. And then we'll get back to him in a second. But Dez Bryant, who hurt himself on the miraculous catch he had last week, his knee and ankle are sore, and he may not play.
Wow. Yeah, again, that warrior mentality, wants to help his team. I believe sometimes, when those guys get those big contracts and they get to listening to social media and the national media, thinking that they need to justify themselves, and I'm speaking for Dez Bryant in this case, sometimes you come back a little faster than you should and give your body time to heal, So hopefully I would like to see him shut it down for the rest of the year. I mean, Dallas isn't going to go to the playoffs, and they aren't going to do very much more than what they've done already. I think it would be advantageous if they just shut them down the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm 50-50 on the Dallas in the playoffs, because they're in an odd division, and I mean, they do get Romo back in like a week or two, but I mean, I don't know. I kind of partly agree that maybe he should shut it down and just be completely healthy starting next year, but I mean, if there's even just a twinkle of a chance, I think Dez is going to be in there, and it's kind of a Welker situation. Just at least it's not a head injury; it's more of a foot and knee. But I mean, you really don't want to wreck yourself for the rest of your life, so you got to kind of, you know,
right,
take
right.
It for
and
what
really,
it is.
How effective is Romo really going to be when he comes back? I mean, same situation. I mean, this isn't the first time he's had that injury. And I don't know, man. I get the contract that you need to, you know, you don't want to have money on the table per se. And you want to remain competitive, especially given that, I mean, looking at the NFC South last year, what was it, 6-10 team made it into the playoff? So it's
7-8-1. Isn't that what the Panthers were? 7-8-1,
yeah.
Something like that. It was crazy.
Right. So, I mean, anything's possible, right? But, I don't know, man. I'm probably more 75-25, I would say.
Yeah, and given those two players, as far as for Dallas with Romo and Dez, if they think there's a shot, they're going to give everything they got, even if it, you know,
absolutely
cripples them.
Absolutely.
But back to Peyton, who is was actually going to be our leading story up until I want to throw those things in. Peyton Manning, who finished the game with not only an interception, his 13th of the year, now he leads the NFL. I think he still led the NFL before then. But he is 3 yards shy of Brett Favre's passing record. I really thought he was going to get it until he threw that interception, and then his defense let him down, and he never got a chance to come back in.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's going to be a well-deserved record. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I'm sure he'll probably get it on the first play of the next game. With some short 5 yard slant or something like that, but I mean, you could get, the list goes on and on when it comes
right
to Peyton. I mean, he's well deserved, by far one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. Surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, what else can you say, right?
Exactly, and I feel like he's another one of those that you'll have to drag off kicking and screaming, which I hope not. I hope maybe his dad has gotten his ear about, you know, Peyton, at some point you got to see an end to this chapter, and you got to be able to find that end and know when it is.
Well, you know what's interesting, and this has been kind of a debate in the national media, you can kind of tell it in his body language.
Right.
I mean, he kind of seems to have that look about him that, hey, you know, they'll go deep into the playoffs and do whatever they do, you know.
Right.
But it wouldn't surprise me to see him hang it up this year. I mean, what else do you have left to prove, right? You won the Super Bowl. You've got every record there is. I mean, what else is there left, right? I mean, he's got endorsement deals, so he's marketable outside of football, always has been. I think that's one of those times when you ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And last week I talked about, I talked about, you know, this possibly being his last year. That John Elway knows that this year for the Broncos is it. They kind of squandered it a couple years ago. They had a down year last year, and that's why he tried to get Joe Thomas. That's why he tried to make all these moves at the end. He realizes if they don't do it this year, it's 3 to 5 years before they're close again.
Right, and Peyton strikes me as that type of player, man, that really has such a love for the game. That I'm pretty sure he's had the conversation with John Elway that maybe it's time to start finding his successor. And if you see Peyton hang around, I think you'll see him more with a clipboard and for the purposes of training whoever that next guy is. But I think that's about what you'll see going forward.
Right, and like I argued with a Broncos fan earlier this week, if Brock Osweiler was really good, then he'd already be in right now.
Absolutely. I mean, Peyton has probably already identified, whether in the college ranks or someone that's going to be a free agent, with Mr. Elway, I would imagine, in private conversations on who that next guy needs to be.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, I said this earlier this year, I think, that I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to get Elway to make a move for his brother, maybe.
Ah, interesting. That'd be an interesting choice.
It would be an interesting choice. But we're going to try to run through some of these because there's a bunch to get to, and I do want to spend enough time on Falcon stuff because I don't know if you heard last week's show, but, you know, we debuted the Can We Fix It?
Right.
has its own theme music and everything, and we'll get into week two of that, which will be, I think it'll be a lot of fun, and it just proves that if you leave the soundboard unattended, I will edit my own music and find fun things to put on the board.
Hey, I like it.
You know, the good thing is nobody got fired or let go or suspended for leaving the board unattended with me around. So everybody is still employed here currently. So we're good.
Yeah, didn't lose any sponsorship, so we're good.
Exactly. That's the most important thing. But next thing on the list, we want to talk about that Rams hit on Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
You know, it's been set. The way I look at it, yeah, it was a dirty hit. By these standards, or by the 1970 standards, by the 1804 standards, by any standards, it was an unnecessary hit, in my opinion. Bridgewater did recover. He went through the protocol. According to him, he could have actually came back in the game. But then we get into Chapter 2 of this, where Rodney Harrison of Sports Night in America, former Patriot and good defender at that, calls out Jeff Fisher and says Jeff Fisher teams like to try to aim at people, try to hurt people like this. They tried to do it to him in, like, 2004 with some receiver or something, to which Jeff Fisher responds, hey, last time I checked, Rodney Harrison was voted three different seasons as the dirtiest player in the game. He had all these personal fouls. He was known for this. So we kind of get this he said stuff, but to me it all comes back around to that hit, and I think the NFL did fine the guy for the hit.
Right, he did. And he should have been.
Right.
And again, Rodney Harrison's not one of my favorite commentators.
No.
Some like him, some don't, but I don't particularly. He's very biased in his way. But that being said, I mean, Jeff, if that were the case, I certainly don't feel like Jeff Fisher's ever been that kind of a guy in any of the games through his years with the Titans and whatnot. I mean, I just never saw that coming from him. So, again, you know, pot calling the kettle, right? So
right. Right. The NFL handed down the punishment, and I don't think the guy appealed it or anything like that. I'm sure he's already paid it. Teddy Bridgewater says he doesn't hold the guy personally responsible, that it's football, and the NFL's already handled it.
Right. Absolutely.
But to something that the NFL may have to step in on, Reggie Bush, who injured himself and tore his MCL after, I think he ran the touchdown and then fell, correct?
No, it was a kickoff.
Oh, that's right.
It was
right.
A kickoff return.
Right. And he ends up running out of bounds. He hits a strip of concrete right near the crowd barrier and falls. When he does, he tears his MCL. He's out for the rest of the year. I believe he had surgery already. But he's going to sue the city of St. Louis for this injury.
Right. Right, yeah, I've read about that story, and it stems from their stadium is actually owned by the city,
right,
and not by Rams, right, by ownership. Josh McCown had a statement where, you know, the same thing happened to him the previous week, where he, you know, hit that same strip, hit the wall, and, you know, still went back in the game. But the NFL Players Association is actually spearheading the complaint against the Rams and the city to get that resolved, for which they said they're planning to do something about it prior to Sunday's game with Chicago. So I think he's going to have, based on just the activity, he's going to have a valid argument. And I remember thinking, you know, when I read the news that he was out for the year, that this may be a wrap for his career. I mean, he was already kind of buried under the depth chart and so forth and so on, and in reaching the twilight, I just don't see him coming back from something like this. So I think he's going to have a valid lawsuit.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, to me or you, if we go to work and get injured, then there's, you know, unsafe working conditions. So, I mean, technically this could fall into that.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't get it. I mean, the Georgia Dome has grass all the way to the walls around the field. So I've never really understood why there those few stadiums, and there are a couple more that are that way that'll probably get their act cleaned up in lieu of this, that have the same situation, man. It's just ridiculous. You know these guys are coming full speed. It's hard to stop yourself, and you've got cleats on. So, I mean, it's a recipe for disaster. So I don't even understand how that was even a design. That's such a major design flaw that should not exist in any stadium.
Right, and the two quick notes on that. Like you said, walking on concrete with those metal spikes and those, sometimes they're not even metal, but we've all went golfing too. But You know,
right.
Uncle Bartolo, as I call him, Bartolo Colon, had that mishap a couple weeks ago, right before the World Series, where he's walking through a tunnel and just slips and just flaps, you know. And it's not him being out of shape or nothing, because he's probably the most athletic guy on the field. But when you hit those slick surfaces like that, and you just can't get enough traction. And then the other thing,
right.
At the GSU game on Saturday, we were actually, a couple of us were going down to the field, and one of the University of Louisiana Lafayette, who the Panthers were playing, guy got on the elevator with us, and he said, he goes, "Can I ask you guys a question? Why are they moving to a different place? There's nothing wrong with the dome." And I gave him the polite answer of, they wanted a new stadium, and structurally and you know, visually, there's nothing wrong with this dome. They just wanted a different one.
Right, but I mean, you know what? What's interesting is this entire situation with St. Louis is probably, you know, at least buried under the fine print as a reason, you know, to why this move is being made. But I mean, the bottom line is, you know, Arthur's not getting the revenue from the dome. He doesn't own it. And that's just the bottom line.
Same thing with St. Louis owner Stan Kroenke. That's part of why he's wanting to move to L.A. because he's going to pay for the building so they can play in it.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and that's a smart business decision. So I don't fault any owner that wants to own the whole pie. Right. I mean,
exactly.
You put your money on the table. It's smart business. I mean, you wouldn't want to live in a house you didn't own.
Exactly.
That's for sure. So, same scenario.
Exactly. This has got to be the most bizarre, you know, primetime quarterback injury year there has been, in my opinion, whether it's been reported or not. And I'll get to the other one that I don't have on here. I just noticed we didn't put that. Big Ben has got a mid-foot sprain. He's going to be out 1 to 2 weeks. Yeah, Big Ben, who just got back, played one game, showed everybody why he's an elite quarterback, but he's going to be out 1 to 2 weeks again. So the Pittsburgh Steelers, once again, have to rely on a backup, and this time it's Landry Jones who's going to carry the load.
Right, and again, classic scenario where you've got a warrior for quarterback. Yeah. I mean, the guy's a warrior when he's in the game, probably one of the hardest, if not the hardest, quarterback to bring down. That competitive drive, man. I mean, you can't keep him away from the game. There's probably nothing they could have ever said to him to shut him down. And I'd be surprised if he's shut down 1 to 2 weeks. But again, you know, the body is just not made that way. And sometimes the body, that's not going to do what the mind tells it. So I think Landry Jones can carry the load. He's shown that he can manage the game. I think, without Le'Veon Bell, it might be a little challenging, but we'll see. We'll see.
Hey, D'Angelo Williams, who I've always been a fan of, and I'm not just bandwagoning now. You can ask people years ago. I always liked him in Carolina. He's making it seem like Le'Veon Bell can stay out as long as he can because, I mean, D'Angelo, apparently he dropped like 15 pounds in the offseason, and it revitalized his career.
Right, and then he definitely revitalized. One of the things that D'Angelo has always had a problem with, but he hasn't shown it yet, is he tends to put it on the carpet quite a bit.
Right.
So we'll see. But again, you know, with that guy they've got out there catching pass, man, anything can happen. That guy, man, I'm a Julio fan, but my goodness.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown is something else.
Well, and, you know, as we get into Antonio Brown, the next thing we were going to get to here, this past week with Big Ben back, it's you would almost, if you look at Antonio Brown's numbers, you would think it doesn't really matter who throws to him, that he's always going to have like 150 yards or better. But Big Ben comes back after being gone, and you would think they were reunited in some sort of, I don't know, some sort of beach scene where they run up to each other or something, because 284 yards receiving for Antonio Brown with Big Ben back. The odd thing is, no touchdowns.
Right, right. And it speaks to probably some other areas of concern for another team we'll talk about later on in the half hour. But when you have that chemistry, there are just certain players, certain quarterbacks that have a chemistry with their certain receivers that, again, man, I don't care if you what you do to him, and coupled with his own athletic ability, I mean, this guy catches passes and reverses fields and stops and backs up, and it's just, I mean, God, look, what can you say? What can you say? It's incredible. It was incredible to watch. I remember flipping through Red Zone, which I frequent most of the days until the Falcons come on, and just watching, you know, and going, wait a minute, did they just say he had 121 yards and it wasn't halftime yet? I mean, nuts. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand, too, that you would like the Red Zone channel because it's not like the Falcons spend a lot of time in it, so.
Actually, they do. They just don't score.
Yeah, which is something we're going to address a little later on. I don't know if you heard that new soundbite. Right. I added it just for you.
Hey, man, I like it. I like it.
Well, it was one of the first things I did with the soundboard wide open. I was like, I'm going to find that.
But Somebody take the keys.
Exactly. But it's just, yeah, I would absolutely agree. It's just, it looks like Big Ben and Antonio Brown just, it's like watching Brady and Moss back in the day or Montana, Montana Rice. They just kind of look at each other. Sometimes it's a wink. Sometimes it's just a Bewitched style, just, you know, nod of the nose or something. And just, there it is.
Hey, man. Hey, man. Brady has that same thing with Edelman now.
Yeah.
As does, Aaron Rodgers with Cobb, and I mean you can go through the list on and on and on, and that's the sign of a good quarterback, right? It's somebody
right.
that can find that guy, and but you don't overdo it. You know what I mean? You still go other places, but when you need somebody, you know who you can go to, and that guy's always open. And I take that back. It isn't Randall Cobb. It's Jordy Nelson, and I think that's what happens. What's happening with the Packers now? If Jordy Nelson and Aaron Rodgers have that type of connection, it's like the guy's always open.
Right. It's just it really is something else. And speaking of something else, what about these Vikings who have I thought they had lost so many more games than this, but when I realized their win this week put them tied with the Green Bay Packers for first in that division,
right.
I literally
right.
almost fell out of the chair.
Right, quietly,
yeah.
Man. Mike Zimmer, whom we had as our defensive coordinator for a hot minute, they got a guy that I thought always deserved a shot at the head coaching spot because
right.
of just what he brings to players. I mean, they've got the right combinations, man. You give those guys a couple more receivers and they've got the right quarterback. I mean, even AP's kind of starting to feel it and pick it up a little bit. I think, again, the Vikings are well on their way to becoming that team that's always around. So, yeah, I quietly noticed that as well. And surprise, unfortunately, my team's got to see them in a couple of weeks. And hopefully we'll get it together before we see them. It's going to be a long day.
Yeah, it definitely could be a long day. I mean, you know, good for them. And I agree that Mike Zimmer, finally given the chance here, has proven why he should have been a head coach probably 10 years ago. But, I mean, he's
right.
got a good crop of people. It's not just Adrian Peterson. Bridgewater is making good decisions. He's being able to move the ball. You know, on offense, they're doing it without Mike Wallace. And I know it's without Mike Wallace because I have a couple fantasy teams that I've had to drop him off of because of almost his negative points every week. But,
right.
I mean, they're doing it with a lot of young guys we haven't heard of. So this means they could do this run for probably 5 or 6 years.
Absolutely. It's called player development, Jeremy. It's called
yep.
player development. I mean, and that's the bottom line. You find the guys with talent, and you develop them over time. So that it's Bill Belichick perfected it more than anyone, right?
Right.
Where he just brings in guys you've never heard of. I mean, who knew about Deion Lewis or, you know, any of these guys? Unfortunately, he's hurt now.
Who is it this week? Christian White? I mean, who is that guy?
Right, but guess what? He'll probably come in and rush for 100 yards. I mean, because that's just what he does, man. He develops his players. He sets the tone for what he wants and what he expects, and they just go out and execute. I mean, it's great, and I'm sure it's cap-friendly, right? Because
yeah.
you're not paying these guys millions of dollars. And
right,
these
it's
guys
like
are
Seattle
still coming
a couple
out
years
performing
ago.
At championship level. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a Seattle thing. And then all of a sudden, in a couple of years, when you have to pay them, you better make sure you can keep the right one.
Right, right. Baltimore, Ozzie Smith has a track record of that same thing, right? He goes out and just finds players for some reason. And they go to other teams and don't show up.
Right. The only example of somebody that did was, what is the lineman's name? I just saw him. He's a great pass rusher now for the team that played the other night. I'm trying to think who it is. But they were like, this is his first year here. He spent the last four with Baltimore. And I'm like, man, I don't even remember him on Baltimore.
Absolutely. You got Edgerton Hartwells and the Ellerbees who go somewhere else and sign massive contracts and don't show up. So, I mean, kudos, man, for guys flying it. And Reggie McKenzie, Coach Hill's friend here out in Oakland. I mean, look at the turnaround there. I mean, come on.
Oh, man. Some of our friends out there at 95.7 The Game in the Bay Area, I like to talk back and forth with them in between all of our shows. And we talk a lot more Raiders nowadays than 49ers. But, man, those Raiders, I said, literally on the East Coast, I said, there are so many new Raider fans that have popped up. I said, these guys are exciting.
Oh, man. Yeah, those guys are, man, they look good, man. They're going to – I was telling a friend of mine, hey, man, relax. You know, the Raiders are going to be just fine.
Yep. Yep, and football is better when people like the Cowboys and Raiders are back in the scene. So, I mean, it's good to kind of have both those teams kind of back in the mix.
It's good to see the Raiders back on track now.
Exactly. Let's see. Speaking of people who need to get back on track, I wrote down on here, and I'm not purposely trying to make another case for why, as NFL Network reshows the Bridgewater hit. Man, it looks worse every time I see it. But I'm not trying to make another case for Brady being the best possibly of all time or of this generation. We can debate that all day long. But the Green Bay Packers have suddenly hit a wall, and I think part of it Colin Cowherd actually brought this up is why I put it on here about Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, he got frustrated this week, and he threw one of the new play tablets they have down there that they go over film with. I mean, that happens. I'm glad he's showing some passion down there instead of his normal stoic behavior. But, you know, he's got great mechanics. We all know that Aaron plays the position statistically better than pretty much anybody right now. But Cowherd brought up, when has he won a big game away from Lambeau Field except for that Super Bowl, 4 years ago? And you start thinking about it and you go, you know, Aaron Rodgers doesn't win away from home very often, like big-time games. It's really weird.
Yeah, but you know what? There's also other pieces too, right?
Right. I'm not saying it's all his fault. I'm just like, it's really weird because quarterbacks are the most accountable person when it comes to a record.
Right, right. But, I mean, you'd much rather have that guy than anybody else. I mean, he hasn't really had, you know, the big, big superstar running back. I mean, we talked Eddie Lacy, but he really hasn't had one since probably Dorsey Levins or, you know, receiver-wise, Jordy Nelson, but, you know, when he's there. But aside from that, I mean, he's doing it with Tier 2 players, and he's still making it happen. And again, now he's showing the emotion because this is something that Green Bay hasn't seen in quite some time. They don't have the defense that they once had. You know, when B.J. Raji was in his prime and doing things differently, and you know, even now, you know, they just don't seem to have the defensive effort to stop teams anymore. So they're in a firefight all the time. So I think that's kind of an unfair shot towards him. I mean, he definitely still is capable, but he's doing it with Tier 2 players and a different type of behavior, in a different culture. I mean, they don't have the Belichick culture. So, and it has to rotate, man. The winning has to rotate. I tell people all the time, and they go, the Falcons don't have any rings. Guess what? One day the sun shines on the dog, right?
Right, exactly.
It's just the way that it is. It's their turn now, right?
Exactly. Like the poker reference, it's a chip and a chair, and they've hung on to that chip and that chair for a long time. You're still in the game.
Right.
You're gonna be dealt bad hands, whether it's the NFL season or whether it's in life. It's not just about the bad hands and what you do with them. You got to keep yourself in the game so that when you are dealt a good hand, you're available to do something with it.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's just their turn now. It's just their turn.
Yeah. Well, maybe not this year, but, you know, coming up soon, right?
Well, I mean, they're trying to be on the bottom end, right? I mean, they haven't been on the bottom half for a long time.
Well, I mean,
we'll see. Second half, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. After hearing some things I've been hearing, I'm hopeful.
Right, and I'll tell you, because I've debated with Falcons fans all week long what I've said about it, and, you know, there's a lot of hope. I'm not going to doom and gloom every week on the Falcons because they're still, what, 6-2 at this point. I mean, it'd be different if they were 0-8 to this point. Then I would say, hey, doom and gloom, let's look at who they can draft. But, you know, they're not in that.
Yeah, but they're Denver Broncos are what, 8-1 or 7-1? I mean, so it's a 6-2 with an asterisk, right? I mean, because they should be 9-0. Bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, they've beaten teams they weren't expected to beat, and they've lost to three teams that they should not have ever been on the field with. So,
right.
You know, and we'll talk a little bit about it later. But yeah, it's just the luck of any given Sunday, right?
Exactly. And real quickly, we'll get into Andrew Luck's injury. It's just, last week I said about Jay Glazer, who seems to be ahead of everybody else in reporting things because of the people he knows. You know, he called the John Fox thing way before Denver said anything about letting him go, among other things. But he said that he had Andrew Luck had an unreported rib injury, to which the Colts have tried to backtrack and say, oh, he didn't really have that. And, they're trying to cover themselves and all. And then suddenly, after that hit he took on Sunday, apparently wasn't feeling well Monday, he gets the scans and everything. Turns out it's a lacerated kidney, and he has an abdominal tear at that. So he's out anywhere between 2 to 6 weeks. And for Falcons fans,
right,
in 2 weeks he's in town, so, you know, maybe that helps. But, you know, we'll get to that later. But as far as this could be just another case as to why these running, scrambling quarterbacks have got to change up their game a little bit, because he's one that likes to duck his head and take the hit. He might want to start rethinking that.
Right, and that's that warrior mentality. That's why I really like Andrew Luck. I wasn't convinced about him coming out because I hadn't really seen a lot of him, and I didn't know the pedigree, but he has the pedigree, man. He just now they know what they have in him. They just need to put the other pieces around him. I mean, since Marvin Harrison's gone, I mean, you don't really have that. You got T.Y. Hilton, who when he stays on the field, right? And you got to go find that running back that can take the pressure off of him so that he doesn't feel like he has to continue to do that. But do what they did with Peyton. Put that monster offensive line in front of him and let him do what he does. I mean, and that's what he doesn't have now. He's got a turnstile for an offensive line.
Right. I mean, he pretty much has 5 bird baths. That's what I call him.
Right. Absolutely. So, man, I'll get well, Andrew. Shut it down. Come back next year. You know, that lacerated kidney thing is what really scared me out of all of it, man. You don't really want to start playing with the kidneys.
Well, you know, that's the second person in consecutive weeks to have that injury. As I forgot the guy's name now. I don't know. The San Diego receiver is out for the rest of the year because he actually needed surgery on his.
Hey, man, you know what? When you've got 300-plus pound guys running 4.5 40s now.
Right.
It's a different game now. It's a different game. They run faster, and when they bring it, they bring it. And it just goes to show to the violent nature, and I've often said it in several other circles that it blows my mind that NFL contracts aren't guaranteed. It blows my mind.
They're the only major
just by
sport.
The sheer nature of right. By the sheer nature of the game. I mean,
right.
Come on.
I mean, you know, we could see a Missouri-style, University of Missouri-style walkout at some point to go, hey, either guarantee him or we're not playing.
Hey, it would definitely work. I mean, NFL is the most popular sport going on right now, and that's just soccer. So.
Yep, absolutely. Of course, we're going to get into some doom and gloom stuff here in the next few topics, and we're going to try to run through them pretty quickly, but I did want to get your take on a few of them as well as we'll go back and forth on a couple. But the Greg Hardy photos were released, and by photos, this is not some scandalous thing. We already know about it. These are basically the injuries that his girlfriend at the time sustained from the activities they had a couple, about a year or so ago, wasn't it?
Right, it was. Yep.
But now these are out. We see the damage that was done, and I mean he's already paid for his crimes criminally, and he's already paid for his crimes as far as the NFL. And I don't know why people needed to see these photos to know the severity of the issue.
Yeah, and again, man, you know what? It's starting to uncover that layer that no one
right.
wants to talk about. You've got owners, and I just hate to say it, of a specific
right.
team that we talk about with asterisks, as well as this particular owner, that has a little bit more power, obviously, within the league
right.
than people want to agree to. I mean, Ray Rice incident, you know, that damaging video came out right around the time. This was happened to be a situation where they hit it. You know, again, it's pointing back to Roger Goodell again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other intangible that comes into play, and this is just something that happens in the league quite a bit that people don't realize, she took a payoff.
Yep,
you know,
she took
a settlement. And I'm sure it was a nice size settlement, if you know. And again, either you're for the cause and you really want to do something about it, or you're in it for the money. And that is not. Let me state this. This is not to downplay what he did, because those pictures were crazy. I mean, I've never
yeah.
seen anything like that. And he obviously has some problems that he needs to deal with. However, you know, you've got a combination of that power structure within the league with certain owners. And they're able to cover this stuff up. But like you mentioned, it's a double jeopardy situation. The NFL can't possibly come back and punish this guy again. You've already done it. You've
right.
already done it at this point. So, again, man, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate.
It definitely is. And for a lot of people who don't know, we reported on it when it happened too, but there was two different court dates associated with Greg Hardy and his then girlfriend. One was like preliminary and kind of monetarily based, and it was settled. But then there was the criminal aspect of it, where it was like him versus the state of North Carolina or whatever. And she failed to show up. And do you remember where she was that day?
No, I do not. I remember. I meant to ask about that. We'll go research that, but I did.
I remember us reporting, I think you might have been on then, may not, I can't remember, but on the day of that criminal court date, where all she had to do was appear pretty much, she didn't appear. It was about 3 days after her probably payoff. I believe she tweeted a picture of herself on a beach somewhere in the Caribbean.
Wow.
I don't think
and
she
again,
realized.
You
yeah.
know. And this is... That is, you know what, Jeremy, that situation is more damaging
yep.
to those individual women who actually are going through some very real situations,
right?
Right, and they're not in it for the monetary purposes. And I'm not suggesting that she is, but you know, hey, if it walks like a duck, it talks like a duck. But
right.
it cripples the case for so many women who are really going through this type of stuff, man, and. It also, you know, and we talked about Wes Welker, and we talked about Teddy Bridgewater now taking us his John Abraham. You know,
mm-hmm.
how much of the physical nature of this game, you know, do we now have to start taking a look at mental health and those types of activities, man? Because, you know, for another human being to inflict that kind of punishment on another human being,
right?
It's got to be more to it than, oh, he has anger issues, right? This is bigger
right.
than that. And I think now it's going to start. You're going to start seeing some activity and some light being shed on that topic, man. You've got to start addressing these mental issues that could possibly be creeping and have been creeping into this for a long time.
Right, and it's good that you phrased it and brought it up that way, because the next thing I was going to get to is, I don't know if this guy has mental issues as far as hits to the head. I've always thought he's a little off anyway as far as his attitude, but Aqib Talib and his supposed. Now, clearly, he tried to eye gouge the Indianapolis player, but it ended up costing Denver the win, because then he got a personal foul at the end of the game that pretty much ended the game.
Right. Right. Yeah, same situation. I mean, this guy's been causing trouble for a while. I mean, we've seen the blow-ups on the sidelines when he was with Tampa, we've seen the activity. And you got to start taking a look at that stuff, man, because it's real. It's obviously very real.
Right, absolutely. And like you said, in Tampa, and there's a reason why Belichick let him go and didn't even bother trying. Or I think he was in New England, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was. He absolutely was right after he left Tampa.
And it's not just because they didn't want to pay him what he wanted, but, I mean, they knew this guy was a head case anyway. He's always had this kind of anger thing. Did you hear what he said he was trying to do instead of eye gouge this guy?
No, what was his excuse? Humor me.
I literally almost spit water out earlier when I was listening to it. But he said, I'm trying to think the exact way he phrased it, but it was to the point of he was trying to, like, push the guy's face mask instead of eye gouge him. And I was like, no, that was Three Stooges eye gouge right there. That's
right.
That's illegal in MMA. That's illegal in the WWE. In no way does anybody ever condone that, not even special forces.
Wow, I mean.
But he said something along the lines of that, and I just went, you've got to be kidding me.
Head case.
Yeah, absolutely. Head case. And I love that Goodell spent absolutely probably about 60 seconds figuring out what to do with him and automatically suspended him for next week.
Right. Done deal.
He tried to appeal, and the NFL guy that he appealed it to just looked at him like, seriously? No, you're serving at least one game.
Right. You better be glad it's just one game, idiot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But we do want to end on some good notes. So do want to give a special shout-out to Eli Manning, who got win number 96 of his career, which puts him all-time wins leader for the New York Giants. Now, they've had some pretty good quarterbacks over the years, including Phil Simms and some of those guys. I was surprised that 96 was the top.
Actually, you know what? I was, too. And I'm glad that he got it. Because, again, Phil Simms is another guy that I'm not a fan of. But, you know, they had some very good quarterbacks, man, up in that area. And good for him. Good for him. He deserved it.
Well, and not to be outdone, the other night, I believe it was Cutler took over the Bears, like, touchdown leaderboard or something like that. And it's not all that much. It's, like, somewhere in the 90s or something like that. He passed Sid Luckman, who set it in, like, 1950 or something.
Wow, so not even through the Jim McMahon era, which would make sense. But, I mean, and to Jay Cutler, you got to give him credit, man. That guy's been playing lights out, man, since he came back from his injury. Very quietly, but he's been playing very well here over the past few weeks. So I'm glad to see him. You know, whatever happened, he got a turnaround, and that's good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Jay Cutler, hashtag warrior right there.
Absolutely.
And then I'm going to end on, well, it's a bright spot for most. It might be a sore subject for you, but I got to bring this up because this is another sneaky team, in my opinion. Are the Carolina Panthers the best team in the NFC right now?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
As I hate to say that in my core, yes, they are. Cam Newton's playing lights out. Everybody believes. We all thought, a lot of us thought that with Kelvin Benjamin going out, that they weren't going to do what they're doing now. Their running back, and I can't call his name right now, is playing lights out. Jonathan Stewart is playing lights out right now. Their defense, which has always been great, you know, here the past couple of years, it's become that Seattle defense that we saw a couple of years ago. I'm afraid of them. I'll tell you. I mean, the way that they're playing ball right now, I can see them going to the big dance this year. Absolutely.
Yeah, because I don't know anybody on the NFC side that can stand in their way.
No, man. Those guys aren't afraid of anybody. And they're showing it with their play. They're showing it with their play.
Absolutely. AFC side, I could argue it's going to come down to New England, Denver, and Cincinnati, but New England's got the edge in that.
Yeah, but Cincinnati, look out for them, man.
Yeah.
Those guys, I mean, if they can stay healthy and Red Raiders keeps playing like he's playing, I mean, he always chokes in the playoffs, so he's going to have to get that monkey off his back. But, I mean, I can certainly see Carolina, Cincinnati in the Super Bowl, for sure.
Well, like you said, eventually the sun will shine on the dog at some point. So, I mean, at some point, Andy Dalton is going to win a game.
Well, you know what? The other thing, too, man, that's a big sidebar out of that is, you know, how many of us thought that Marvin Lewis should have been let go a long time ago, right?
Yeah,
so
yep,
it
my hands in the air on that one.
It goes to show that, you know, they saw something in him. They knew he had the formula, and he's doing what he's producing.
Right.
And it's showing.
Absolutely. And, you know, since we're talking about the Cincinnati Bengals, we'll give a shout-out to two of the biggest Bengal fans that are friends of ours. And, of course, that would be Icky Woods and Connor from Southern Gothic. Shout-out to those guys for being on the winning side this year.
Absolutely. And to that point, I got a call from Mr. Woods about 2 days ago. And the gist of the call was I said, hello. And all I heard was laughter. He started it out with a laugh. So, yeah, it's good to see, man. He's ecstatic about what's going on up there. He offered his opinions. I told him that he needs to come back on the show.
And so
we need to reach out to him because he definitely wants to get back on and have some fun with us. So
absolutely.
Hopefully we can get him on the next couple of weeks.
I don't have it in front of me. I was going to see who they play in the next couple of weeks. They got some big games coming. So, yeah, we'll definitely get into that and would love to have him back on. But anything else NFL you want to get to?
No, I'm good, man. I'm good. I think we covered it all.
All right. Well, then we'll hit a quick break, come straight back in, and talk some Falcons right here on Blog Talk Radio for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show.
Jeremy, the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
And that's right, as the edit of the Falcon song. I don't know how you like that one yet, Reggie. I'll let you listen to the whole thing one day. But right here for Falcon Zone on Blog Talk Radio, I'm Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the King AT Alien, Reggie Walker. Welcome back, Reggie.
Yes, sir. Good to be back, Jeremy.
Yeah, I kind of edited it down where it just says Falcons on top.
Right. And hopefully we can get back on top at some point. We'll see.
Right. To be fair, ever since I edited it, they've kind of been on a slide. So maybe I'll go back to the full theme next week.
All right.
I'll take partial blame on that one. But there is a lot we're going to get into. Why don't we just start on recapping that game over the weekend against the San Francisco 49ers and. Really, with about 5 minutes to go in that game, before the fourth and goal on the three that ended up being a field goal, I don't know, I just had this feeling like I didn't think they were going to quite pull it out. I was hoping that the Falcons would, but I had reached out to – I was texting back and forth during the game to Dave and Pedro from the Atlanta Spartan 49er group that we've had on the show a couple times. And I was like, you know, you guys have fun. That was y'all played a really good game. I'm glad somebody got something out of Blaine Gabbert.
Right, but no, they did. They didn't play a good game. I mean, bottom line is, you know, and I've been going back and forth with people all week. You know, saying the defense. Wait a minute, the defense. And Jamie Dukes put out something, a tweet, shortly after.
Exactly.
He goes, listen, 17 points in any game. Give me a good quarterback, and they would love to have a defense that can hold another team to 17 points. I mean, really.
And that was in the first half.
Right, and they didn't score anything. Absolutely. 49ers didn't score a thing in the second half. Go back to the Tennessee game. Same thing. I mean, you hold them to 7 points the entire game.
Yep.
And you can't keep putting it on the defense. You just can't do it. And what boggles my mind, and it's something that Dan Quinn has come out and said here in the last couple of days, is as I was sitting there kind of flicking and getting the score updates because I wasn't able to actually watch the first half.
Right.
They go down and drive in a 2-minute drive and score, go down 85 yards and score in on a 2-minute drive. And,
right.
And we've had this conversation about the Falcons over the past couple of years, and I reminded Coach Hill of that, you know, yeah, we can talk about the offensive scheme. It doesn't fit Matt Ryan. It's obvious, yada, yada, yada. But in
right.
every offensive set he's ever been in, whenever he runs the no huddle, Atlanta moves the ball. And I can't
mm-hmm.
understand for the life of me why that isn't 60% of their offense.
Right.
It just boggles my mind.
Has Matt Ryan not earned the right to call his own plays sometimes?
Well, from what I understand, you know, that's what's about to happen. There was
Good.
A summit. I don't know if you heard about the summit after the game where, you know, Matt put everybody out with the exception, coaches and all, with the exception of Julio Jones and Roddy White. And apparently the gist of that conversation is, you know, Matt, you are the guy with the $100 million quarter contract that can say what needs to be said. You know what works. Let's do it. And now you then shortly thereafter you see Dan Quinn come out and go, yeah, I think we're going to take a look more at the no huddle, because that's what Matt thrives in. Let us
right.
come to the line, look at the defense, and do whatever he needs to do. You know, he's still got some issues with, I think, not going through his progressions, because there's no
right.
way you throw in the triple coverage with Julio with Roddy White over to the side eating potato chips, right?
Yeah.
But I think you're right. It's time for Matt to now take over the game and just do what he does, despite.
Yeah, somebody asked me the other day, they said, what is going on with Roddy White? Where was he? Was he even in the game? And I said, well, he was on the field for more snaps than normal, but, I mean, he might as well have been taking tips from Tyler Starr on how to hand out Gatorade, because it would have been just as effective.
Well, you know what? Brian Finneran reported that he had spoken to some of his 49ers fans, former coaches or what have you, or current coaches, and they mentioned that when they started going through the film, they noticed that Roddy White is definitely very, very upset, and he's noticeably frustrated in all the plays that they saw. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I was agreeing with you.
But what he also mentioned is that the 49ers said they knew exactly what Atlanta was going to do. They
yeah.
haven't done anything different than what they've been doing in every other game. So they actually literally just looked at former other film and looked at the plays, prepared for those same plays, and it's apparent. It's obvious. You've got to get Roddy involved. You've got to.
Right.
And I don't understand why he's not. It just makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense.
Exactly. And, you know, as far as the fourth and goal on the three and Dan Quinn kicked the field goal, I couldn't even fault him at the time for it, because I was thinking the same thing he did. What he's thinking is I kicked the field goal, then we're down by one. There's, what, 4 or 5 minutes left in the game at that point. We're about to kick the ball off. Then I'm going to trust my defense to make a stop, because my defense hadn't allowed a point since the second quarter.
Right. And a lot of people miss that. But I'm going to tell you one thing that Coach Hill mentioned in our private conversations, and I echo that point exactly. What is it about this offense that Dan Quinn wasn't excited about that even allowed him to make that decision? And,
right.
and even in that case, you know, and this is the only gripe that I have about that decision. I'm okay with that statement you made. But why not go for it on fourth and two? You're at the 2-yard line. If you don't get it, the offense is at the 2-yard line.
Right.
They
got
to go 98
defense.
Yards at that point.
Right. Yeah, Blaine Gabbert's not going
so,
98 yards. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
Right. He's not going to go 98 yards. And then now you've got him pinned in the end zone. The chances of you getting a stop or forcing a safety or some stupid pass is probably highly likely, as opposed to giving him 20, you know, 20-some yards. And it actually ended up being closer to the 40 because of a penalty. So,
right.
I mean, you still take the gamble. If you don't get it, the 49ers are still at the 2-yard line, at their own 2-yard line, backed up against the end zone. It just would have made more sense to me.
Right. And I have I call it the goal line theory, and it developed when I watched a couple weeks ago. It was when Michael Vick was quarterback of Pittsburgh before he got hurt. They get to the end of the game. They're on like the two, and they do a direct snap to Le'Veon Bell, who ends up stretching out and getting the score. And everybody says, why would you do a play like that? You got Vic. You got all this stuff. Well, it's like this. In the National Football League, when you get on the goal line, and I say probably from the three-yard line all the way to the goal line, this theory holds true. You want to get the ball in your biggest playmaker's hands, not your biggest player, not your best player, your biggest playmaker. For Pittsburgh at
right.
that time, your best playmaker is Le'Veon Bell because Ben Roethlisberger, who is one of the top playmakers in the league, is on the sideline. So they give it to Bell at that point. What I'm thinking is Dan Quinn is looking around and he's saying, well, Matt's been struggling. Matt's been having some issues. Maybe he's not my playmaker. So I don't have a way to get it to Julio Jones without direct snapping. And if Julio's in the backfield, people are going to know what's going on. The only thing I don't get is why you wouldn't give it to Devontae Freeman at that point, because he would be your next best playmaker.
Well, because the run game was being stuffed the whole time.
Right.
I mean,
right.
But bottom line, here now is the argument against the Matt Ryan. I want to get the F off my field, Matt Ryan. I want the Matt Ryan that in the Washington game, he runs the 15-yard scramble, the D-back
yep.
comes up to tackle him, and he drops his shoulder. That's the Matt Ryan everybody's waiting to see consistently
yep.
because that Matt Ryan can get 2 yards. That Matt Ryan
right.
can go. He's 6'3", 200-some-odd pounds. Go get 2 yards.
Right.
And that's going to always be the argument for this guy. I mean, there's no reason that you don't direct snap, pump fake, and then take off, period.
Exactly.
There's no reason.
Exactly.
I'd rather see that and you not get it than to not even try it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what Atlanta fans were saying as far as that field goal and as far as that is they're like, at least give it a shot. We can be mad at you for missing it, but at least we'll say it was an aggressive call. It's somebody who's trying to figure it out.
Right, and bottom line, if you don't get it, San Francisco's now on their own 2-yard line.
Right.
Having to, you know, get first downs from their end zone. And what's
right.
the likelihood of that?
Exactly. Exactly. But like
yeah.
I said, there are bright spots for sure. Eric Weems on special teams is making us all forget that Devin Hester's still on the roster. It's just he hasn't come back from an injury yet. In fact, I think Hester could be done as far as with Atlanta. They may cut him before the end of the year, or if not, this will be his last year.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, it's pretty obvious. I think that, you know, you'll probably see Weems move more to another position on special teams if they ever allow Justin Hardy to start fielding punts and kickoffs, because that guy is electric. He's a spark plug waiting to happen, and hopefully, man, they'll take the muzzle off of this guy, man, and let him do what he does.
Well, I mean, Dan Quinn, this is his first year, so I'm going to give him a pass as far as development because he really hasn't had time to develop anybody. He's trying to figure it all out.
Well, this isn't his team. This
right.
isn't his team. I mean,
right.
This isn't the blueprint of his team yet. I mean, and I tell a lot of fans that, you know, give this guy some chance, some time. We're like pass rush. Listen, you got to know Bruce Irvin's coming here next year. Bottom line, he's a free agent. He's already stated it. They quieted him during the season. But there's no way he doesn't come to Atlanta next year if you don't see Michael Bennett as well. So give
right.
the guy some time. This isn't his team. So let him get his guys in, and I think we'll fare out. But to see what he's done, and I'll say this consistently, he's been able to turn around the Falcons because he created competition at every position. The only position that he didn't do that with was at quarterback. So
right.
I would venture to say that next year you're going to see somebody there. If Matt doesn't turn it around, you're going to see somebody come in as a backup that can push him for that position. You're going to see that. You're going to see an RG3 or Kaepernick or somebody that can run that offense that's going to make Matt play for his job, man. You got to have it.
Man, even though you've had some time off the show, you were already about to read my mind. I was about to say, I had a debate on social media earlier where somebody asked me where those two players you just mentioned could end up next year. And I said, well, RG3 is going to be an Eagle as long as Chip Kelly's still head coach. I actually think Chip Kelly could try to move to Tennessee so he gets his quarterback. But as far as Kaepernick, I said, this is out on a limb. Falcons fans, bear with me. But what if you bring in Kaepernick to push Matt Ryan? And if something does go bad, an injury, or Matt Ryan just loses his mojo, Kaepernick could still be a good quarterback.
Dude, I'm going to tell you something. That is the type of quarterback that you need for this offense.
Yep.
Dude, you got to have a quarterback that can scramble. You got to have a quarterback that when everything breaks down, that you can do what you do. Now, will they do that? Who knows? Because Kaepernick's going to have to get much better at the pass, and whoever you bring in, you're going to have some pass ability because you're paying another guy over there $65 million, and you don't want to waste a guy like Julio Jones in his prime. However,
right.
Julio Jones is one of those guys that if the ball is just anywhere in his vicinity, he's going to get it. So,
yep.
I mean, you know, you give the guy time to develop. But trust me, mark these words. They're going to bring somebody in that's going to cause some controversy for Matt Ryan. He's going to keep him looking over his shoulder. I'd be surprised if he hadn't already had the conversation with Arthur Blank. And that's the only position that you don't have competition at. It is, quite frankly, and it shows. He knows Renfrey's not going to get – he's not going to get yanked for Sean Renfrey. He knows that. But if you got a Kaepernick or an RG3 behind you that can come in and take over the game, then you start to play a little bit better than you've been playing.
Well, somebody who started in the league before, has experience, has had success. And think about this. What defensive coordinator did Kaepernick face in the last couple years twice a year up in Seattle? That would be the now
Dan
head
Quinn.
Coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Dan Quinn.
Dan Quinn knows all about
preparing for him. He knows all the tape you can look at Kaepernick. All he has to do is have somebody
Absolutely.
To help develop him. Obviously, the Harbaugh is
busy,
so you find somebody that can actually do something with Kaepernick as far as development and getting his head, a guru of some kind, and it's all over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The guy still has promise. He just needs a fresh scene, man. I think he can still be a star in this league. I think he just needs to get that guy. I mean, he's already kind of started it with working with Kurt Warner in the offseason.
Yep.
Maybe you keep that going or you bring in a Steve Young who's not doing very much of anything right now, and you develop this guy.
Yep. Absolutely. Or, you know, John Gruden just lives in the hills of Tennessee. He's not very far from here. In an offseason, what's it worth to shell out a few checks his direction to go fix Colin Kaepernick?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's worth it. It's worth a shot. You don't get the injury issues. His contract is very cap-friendly, from what I understand, even so much that San Francisco can actually cut him and not lose anything or much of anything at all. I mean, it's worth a shot. Bring him in. Bring him in and see what you got.
We're talking fifth or sixth round pick, and you could probably land him, or you wait till he gets cut and just throw some money at him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd land him now because there are some teams that are saying the same thing about this guy.
Yep.
Hey,
yep.
man, let's just wait and see. I know a Cleveland Browns team that would love to have it.
Yep. It'll save them from having to draft one.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But my other theory that I have is this year I knew, and you guys knew as well, me and you have talked about this, and so has Coach, the Falcons are playing with house money this year. Anytime you have a new head coach, you know there's going to be some turnover, there's going to be some turnaround, there's some different things. Anytime you get a new coach, a lot of times, as much as you want them to go 16-0, you very much expect you could go 0-16. So the fact that they're 6-2 halfway through this season, the house money means the house is paying you a lot of money right now. You must be quite good at cards.
Right. Right. I mean, and that's the thing. You know, I have to calm some fans down, even myself sometimes, and remember that, you know, you've got a team that's learning a new offense and a new defense all in the same year, and they're 6-2. I mean, come on. So, I mean, how much can we really complain? I think, again, for me, it's you're losing the teams you shouldn't be losing to. This isn't the same team that came back on Dallas. This isn't the same team that gutted it out against Washington. This isn't that same team, so something's changed. This isn't the same team that has their foot on the throats of a Houston Texans team.
Right.
And predictability absolutely enters the picture, but then there's some psychological things going on that doesn't look right, and I don't like to see it. So hopefully they get it cleared up in this bye week and really come out and understand that they still got a chance. I mean, there's really nobody else on this schedule, short of Carolina, that Atlanta should even come close to losing to. I mean, given Minnesota's recent success, they got them at home. There's still no reason. You know, we talked about Indianapolis, you know, even though we said Luck's out, but Atlanta seems to have trouble with backup quarterbacks here lately.
Yeah.
but again, Carolina, you're looking at, again, what they got. They're 6-3 now, so they got 7 more games remaining.
Or no, they are 6-3.
There's no
They are 6-3.
You know,
yes,
those two games, maybe. Those two games, maybe. You know, they're going to have some trouble with. But everybody else, they got Tampa, they got Carolina twice, we've got Jacksonville, we've got Indianapolis, and we've got New Orleans to finish up.
Yep.
Out of those games, you should easily go 4-2. Minimum 4-2.
Yeah.
And that makes you 10-6, right? So, and if you come out and playing like you should against Carolina, you could still, well, you should get one of those games, right? So,
right.
Still a lot of games to be played. Just right the ship, man. Right the ship. The defense is doing their job. They're on the field all the time. We're going 3-out every series. And so, I mean, come on. Let's point the finger where it belongs. All the money's on the offensive side, like Jamie Duke said. You know, you got $165 million on that side of the field. So why aren't we doing what we need to be doing?
Exactly. Yeah, all you got to do, if you win 4 out of the next 7 games, you're going to have 10 wins, and I would all but guarantee that on the NFC side, 10-6 is going to get you a wild card.
Oh, absolutely it will. I mean,
you may not have the opportunity.
Right, because Carolina still got, you know, they're not going to go undefeated.
No.
I mean, they're not. It's just the luck of the draw, right? But,
exactly.
I mean, injuries can happen. Who knows what's going to happen? But Atlanta is shooting themselves in their own foot right now. This isn't anything about ability. This is just they're not the same team they were in the first 5 weeks, bottom line.
Exactly. Absolutely. And, let's go on to our newest feature here. Can we fix it? And then I guess at the end of the music, we'll say what we're trying to fix this week.
Damn.
So without further ado.
Can we fix it? Yes, we can. Can we fix it? Yes, we can.
Can we fix it? Yes, we can. That is a fun song, and maybe off air I'll tell you where I got it.
Uh-oh.
if you don't know it. I got the idea because a pretty powerful person in this country kind of piggybacked the idea off of that song. So I kind of took it from that guy who took it from that guy, but I like the song. But this week we do Can We Fix It, and we're going to talk about how we would fix the red zone offense, which has been almost an Achilles heel for, 3 years now?
Right. Right. I think when we talk about that, for me, you fix the offense in general by putting the ball and the play-making ability into the hands, or the play-calling ability, into the hands of Matt Ryan. I think that's how you fix the offense in general. You're going to have some guys that have that killer instinct. He mentioned that and said, hey, we need to get that killer instinct. And I tweeted him very quickly and said, it starts with you. You know,
yep.
4th-and-2, you got to go get those 2 yards. 4th-and-1 against Tennessee, you throw a pick. You got to go get that 1 yard. You're going to have to lay it on the line, Matt Ryan. I mean, bottom line, your team is looking to you to lay it on the line. Aside from the fact that he's the quarterback and he's the leader, he's the guy with the coin.
Yeah.
And it's what's expected. It's what's expected. So you've got to do that. But I think that to fix Atlanta's offensive woes in general, and this has been the consistency across all these years we've just talked about, when Matt is in that no-huddle, two-minute offense type of setup, and I understand that physically it's hard to run that for an entire game,
right.
But if you run it 60% of the time, you got a pretty decent running game right now. You've got that to fall back on. But I think that if you go to that type of offense, I think you'll see Atlanta really put some points on the board.
Absolutely. And I don't have a problem with the offensive line. I think now that they're healthy, and they've really not been that bad all year anyway. This is 5 guys who probably didn't even barely know each other in the offseason are suddenly next to each other in the trenches. So the offensive line is not the issue. We know they got 3 tremendous running backs. You got a big-time quarterback in Matt Ryan. No matter how much I dog him, the guy still has results. You got Julio. Roddy can still catch. Hankerson when he's in. Hardy, as you mentioned. Anybody at this point. I think, besides the things you said, the other thing I would say about the red zone offense and just this offense in general, why can't we be more aggressive? Like you said,
right. You've got to be.
You know, fourth and one, what did the Carolina Panthers do? That's Cam up the middle. What do the Patriots do? That's Tom Brady up the middle. What does Big Ben do? He's up the middle. I'm not saying Matt Ryan should always dive forward on a fourth and one, but they're aggressive enough to go, well, we're not going to punt here. We're clearly going to take this, and this is how we're going to take it.
Absolutely. Get that killer instinct that he talked about.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, that hasn't been discussed, and it's a far-fetched idea, but I don't understand why it hasn't been considered, considering that it's not been. If it were Reggie that was controlling personnel, I'd go, because the one issue we do have on offensive line seems to be at the center position, you go bring Mud Dug back. You bring him back. That's the guy you bring back. That's the guy that instantly solidifies you. The guy can still play the game. He could play the game even when he left the game. And he's the guy that has a rapport with Matt Ryan. I think he was with him, what, 5 years? 4 or 5 years? He knows how to play the position. He can run block. He can pass block. He would solidify the position instantly. You go get him back. Considering he's in shape, you go get him back, and you bring him back in. And that ends your issues with the center position, which seems to be the place that we're having the most problems at on the offensive line.
Which Mike Person hadn't been bad, and James Stone had a few hiccups when he came in relief. But, yeah, I absolutely agree. You need to go either get somebody or you need to solidify one of those two and just say it's not a committee anymore, it's you.
Right, and even with James Stone, here's what I said to Coach Hill. The guy was able to solidify the position last year.
Yep.
I have no clue what happened in preseason or in training camp that got him knocked out of that number one position, but the guy solidified the position, and what you're seeing is just rust. He hasn't been there all year. You can't just throw him back into the game, but I don't understand why they went away from James Stone, because he was doing a great job last year.
Right, that's the reason you.
Right,
that's the reason you got rid of both guys in front of him on the depth chart. It was his job.
Absolutely. So I don't understand how we got to Mike Person, and I won't agree on the fact that Mike Person hasn't been bad. He's been horrible, and it shows. I mean, but you got to either get James Stone work back into the offense where he's doing it full time, or you go get a guy that you know can make it happen. And I would love to see them pull the trigger and bring Mud Dug back in, because I think he can handle it. I think he's in shape. You get him back in there, and then you don't have to worry about the center spot anymore.
Exactly. Or maybe try to see what kind of draft pick it would take to get Alex Mack from Cleveland.
Right. Alex Mack would have been a great – but, again, now you have that situation where you got to learn again. And that he can't do it, but, I mean, Mud Dug knows Matt Ryan's tendencies. He may not necessarily know the offense, but he's run blocked before. So it's not rocket science for him. But there's a comfort level that Matt has with him that you can't find anywhere else with anybody else you bring in.
And if I'm not mistaken, I'll have our stat guy look at this and we'll figure it out before next week. But I'm pretty sure Mike Person is a Kyle Shanahan guy that followed him down here, is why he might be the center.
He is. He is absolutely
a Kyle
Shanahan guy. Yep. So is Chris Chester. Chris Chester also.
Yep. And that happens. When coaches move around, there's certain players that they either give a lifeline to or that they go, no, this is my guy. This is one less person we have to worry about. Only at this point, they're kind of liabilities at times.
Right. And, I mean, I the same holds true in my mind for guys like Bruce Irving and guys like Michael Bennett, who you got to know they're going to make plays to get here because, you know, they credit the success that they've had to Dan Quinn. And even when you look at what Seattle's not doing as a defense, there's no way you can discredit the fact that Dan Quinn is not the guy calling the shots. It's pretty obvious. they're not playing lights out anymore because he's not there.
No, and it come time to pay people, and they couldn't pay everybody, so they went and got paid somewhere else.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, the Beatles were good, but once you break them up, you kind of, you know, they're not quite as good as when they were together.
Right. Right. Bottom line. Bottom line.
But I did want to bring up this theory, and I know you're going to think I'm homering out because I'm probably the only guy on the show that's a fan of the guy. But as far as a potential possibility, can we not use Croy Bierman, who has been making special teams plays? In fact, that Tampa Bay game, every time I turned around, he was making a tackle on special teams or defense. I know he's playing lights out as far as I'm concerned, but can we not use him as a fullback on the goal line? Would he not be a great addition there?
No. Absolutely not. Corey Bierman need not even have a position on the 52, period.
I don't know. He's been playing pretty good on special teams.
Well, special teams, okay. If you want him there, he can have him. But, no, absolutely not. time after time after time, he's not making an impact at all.
To be fair, in the Tampa Bay game, he was the only outside linebacker to make a tackle, I believe.
Well, yeah, okay. Again, the sun shines on the dog every now and then. But we need consistency. At $3 million a pop, we need consistency. I mean, there are guys making more plays that make far less. And he had his opportunities and his chances. He whipped on a tackle against San Francisco that could have stopped that first down, that could have gotten the ball. I mean, come on. Took a bad angle. But that's Ben Croy. So, again, yeah. It's the Croy experiment is over in my mind.
So clearly, Croy, if you come on the show, you can talk to me for 30 minutes.
All right, I'll be quiet.
which could be something. If you get either of the three of us quiet for extended time, you need to make sure we're still okay.
Right.
But let's end on two good notes. And we'll end first on Julio Jones has 1,000 receiving yards for this season. It shouldn't surprise anyone because he's been the absolute number one, two, and three target for Matt Ryan this year. But, you know, this is quite an accomplishment that he's on his way to 2,000 yards this year.
Right. And, again, if you could right the ship, he could definitely do it. I was actually surprised to see that stat because, you know, he hasn't been really going – or doing the big numbers that he has been doing, but I guess he started out the first five games, you know, dropping big numbers. But it goes to show, you know, again, imagine what happens when you stop throwing to him in triple coverage and you actually get another receiver that's actually making plays other than Julio. Imagine what he'll do then. Right? So,
well,
go
ahead.
No. I was just going to say, hopefully they'll fix it because he'll definitely get the 2,000 yards if you start getting a Hardy involved or Roddy White.
Yep. I was just going to say that even though I tell people, and that's whether I'm talking Jaguars, that no matter which team I'm talking, I tell people all the time, don't bring up next year's draft until week 12. But just a quick little quip I had about that is if they don't go after a big-time receiver in round one or two, I think they're really hurting themselves next year.
Yeah, possibly. I mean – again, I think you've got some guys that can definitely step up and do what it needs to be done. Let's see what Justin Hardy has to offer right now. You know,
I agree.
Hankerson obviously was a fill-in. I don't think you see him next year. You obviously can still pull a second or third rounder guy from a receiver perspective, but you still need to now, you know, I look at guys like William Moore. I look at guys like Tyson Jackson, Paul Soliai. That, you know, you got to go find linebackers. We're hurting at the linebacker spot.
Yes.
You know, you got to go find those guys this year. Still going to have to go defense this year if you don't fill it in the free agency.
Right. I absolutely agree. And as we're in the last 5 minutes or so here, the last thing I wanted to say was I wanted to give a huge shout-out and props to Philip Wheeler, who this week, the Georgia Tech guy, and I know you want to talk about a Georgia Tech guy for sure, but we'll do it quickly, and he was the linebacker who filled in for Durant, who had the foot injury or whatever. I don't know what it is with players named Durant with foot injuries, but he was out again this week. So Philip Wheeler stepped in, and he all but won the job, even if Durant comes back. I mean, he played lights out this week.
Absolutely, and I think even the big penalty that he was assessed was bogus. I mean, he obviously dropped his head. I mean, they've shown plays you know, dead up where he's right up on the guy, and it wasn't a helmet. The helmet, he's in the guy's neck, you know, for the most part. So, yeah, I think that's what they went and got him for. They knew the guy could play the game. He's physical, and he's not a liability. So, again, that's why I say you can't really go receiver, because you've got to have those guys.
Right.
You got to retool, especially at the linebacker spot. You just got to get better.
Yeah, I would say that's the weakest point of this team is the lack of depth at the linebacker position. The talent's there, but they're just not playing up to par.
Right.
But
competition,
of course,
man.
Exactly. And of course, we had to do a special edition show tonight because myself and yourself as well will be at the Georgia Tech game tomorrow night. So, if you guys get a chance, if you're out at the Georgia Tech game or out during that way, look for us, take a picture, tag us on social media. We'll feature you on the show page. And we always love meeting people anyway, don't we?
Absolutely. Should be a fun time. I would say bundle up because it can get cold in Bobby Dodd. The other thing is we'll have to make sure we get you a – I don't know if you've got one of the padded stadium seats, but if you do, definitely bring it because you're going to need it.
I do not, but I will. I remember the. Do they got metal or they got concrete?
They've got metal, but I mean, you can rent them. We can rent them when we get there. I have one that I take with me, but definitely we can rent them when we go in the stadium because you're gonna need.
Yeah, I remember back from high school. Those things are worth having.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, it should be a fun time out that way. It'll be second Georgia Tech game I've seen at Tech. They played against the Bulldogs a couple years ago in a not-so-fun game for them. But, no, it'd be a fun time. I got a lot of good friends, including yourself, that went to Georgia Tech. And I remember back in the Calvin Johnson days that I'd go hang out with some of my friends, and Calvin or one of the other players would just casually walk past you somewhere. Super nice people.
Right, right. Should be a good game, Virginia Tech. So hopefully we can – get back to some level of it's been a tough year for Georgia Tech, man. It really has.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of injuries. Justin Thomas trying to do too much. So it's been crazy.
Well, but at least I have to say that quarterback play from Georgia Tech will always be, no matter how bad, it will never be as bad as Reggie Ball, but that's a whole different show.
Hey, you know what, man? Don't even get me started. I mean, Badley wasn't far behind. Josh Nesbitt was okay. But, I mean, they're always going to be compared to Joe Hamilton. I mean, it's just the bottom line. So.
Yeah, I know. I just like to mess with people on that one, especially Tech graduates and people that just attended Tech or fans, because I'm like, what down is it, Reggie? What down is it? And everybody's like, would you hush?
Right. Right.
I was like,
right, exactly.
I was like, hey, every college has a snafu here or there. But that's going to do it for us this week, and we appreciate everybody tuning in to the End Zone Falcons on Super Pro Football Show presented by Impact Media right here on Blog Talk Radio. Reggie, it was a blast having you back on. I know we'll have you back on the next couple of weeks as well. And, you know, happy Veterans Day to everybody. And did we leave out anything?
No, sir. I'll see you tomorrow at the Varsity about 6:30, and we'll go see what Tech's going to do with Virginia Tech.
Absolutely, and trust me, if you guys haven't ever seen us before, if you see the two of us at the Varsity, I guarantee you'll figure out who we are.
Absolutely.
But for the King ATL and Reggie Walker, I am Jeremy the Impact York. Shout out to Coach and his family. Glad everything is going well for them, and look forward to having Coach back on the next week or so. We'll see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
Yes, sir.